Computer. What is this?
Nothing.
Regina raced over and shut the screen. Why do you have so many pictures of Paul?
That is not none of your stupid business, Regina scowled.
Regina, really? Reese asked. Though she knew the answer, she couldn't understand why. He's a spoiled brat.
He's beautiful, Regina whispered, and then looked panicked. Please, do not tell anyone about this.
Reese rolled her eyes. Of course, but Regina, there are other things, better attributes, that make a man desirable. There are more important things to consider than looks. Paul's a mean, horrible person. Why would you want someone like him?
You do not know him like I know him. He is caring and generous and smart and charming.
Stop. You're wasting your time. I'm sure even a serial killer has his moments. Reese meant to sound sarcastic and funny.
Look at him. He's so beautiful.
Regina opened the laptop again, and they waited for the file to open up. She scrolled through picture after picture of him. She had pictures of him smiling, laughing, talking, and having fun. There were pictures of him scowling, worrying, and even looking sad.
I like these best, Regina said,
and she scrolled down to a different set of pictures, at least 50 of them, showing him sitting on the corner of the deck, staring out over the ocean, watching the sunset, alone, after shop hours. Reese had never seen him be anything more than a primal, instinctual caveman, the hunter who did nothing but spread his seed and grunt. She never pictured him to be the type to sit and contemplatively watch a sunset. There was one picture in particular. Reese couldn't take her eyes off it, the longing in his eyes. What's he looking at in this one? Reese asked quietly, actually feeling her heart soften a bit for him. Regina shrugged and got all nervous for some reason, which brought another question to Reese's mind. How did you get these? Don't tell me you actually spy on him. Regina squirmed uneasily, but didn't answer.
Regina, do you do anything all day besides take pictures of Paul?
Reese couldn't imagine it. Regina shrugged and opened another folder and scrolled through pictures of other people from the shop and around town. She had pictures of places and things depicting a typical day on the island, but the file was much smaller.
You're a very good photographer. You've really captured life here.
Can I use some of these on the shop's blog? Reese asked, unsure how Regina would feel about sharing her life through the lens with the world. Regina shrugged again. Reese wondered how she would be able to pull it off, but she had an idea she hoped would attract more tourists to the shop. Chapter 6. Reese told Tracy and Regina she wanted to eat at home. She used being tired as an excuse, but she really just wanted to save a little money. Her budget was in dire straits, and she needed to buckle down and save some money somewhere, or she would starve to death before her scheduled flight home. She planned to eat, read, and write in her journal. Actually, she called it her wine list. She worried that when she died, someone might read it and think of her as the most pathetic, depressed person in the world. They would never know the truth based on the words in the book. A journal was supposed to be a chronicle of a person's life, but she only wrote when she felt down. Putting what bothered her down on paper helped rid her emotionally of the negative energy so she could concentrate on the positive. She found herself writing a lot more often recently. She still schlepped tanks and cleaned the bathroom, still did the dailies every day, and she still had never gone out to get her required open water dives. The training dives were all included in the price of her tuition, and at first she didn't mind waiting, but she was running out of time. With her vacation more than half over, she'd started considering the possibility she might not get certified at all. She shook her head. Even Mr. Grumpy Pants isn't that cruel. He wouldn't do that to me. Reese's eyes grew tired from reading. She decided to call it quits and go to bed. The clock only said 8:30, but she told herself she would appreciate the extra sleep in the morning. Tracy and Regina burst into the apartment and ran into their bedroom while Reese brushed her teeth. She quickly rinsed and followed them into their room.
What are you guys doing home so early?
Changing our clothes. There's a dance concert. You should come.
No, thanks. I was just going to bed. Everyone who dances wins money, Regina said to tempt her.
I got almost $6 last time, and I have absolutely no rhythm, Tracy said. The winner got $31.
Really? Reese could use a little extra cash. Even a few dollars would help. She was acutely aware of how close her budget was going to be.
What do you have to do?
Dance. Never one to beat around the bush, Regina didn't bother to hide what she thought of Reese's question.
How does it work? Each girl has a number. They pass a tray around the bar while we dance, and the spectators put money in the cup of the dancer they like the best. When it's over, they split the money. The winner gets half of the take. The bar keeps 25%, and they split what's left with all the other contestants.
Tracy explained it while she wrapped a skirt around her waist and took her T-shirt off so she could remove her bra. Then she put her shirt back on and asked,
"How do I look?"
"You get more money if you wear something sexy," Regina said. "Come with us. You would definitely help pad the pot. The guys are always more generous when someone like you is dancing."
"Paul will probably be there."
Tracy glanced over at Regina, and then they both looked at Reese to watch her reaction.
"No way, then."
Regina walked up to Reese and put her hands on her shoulders.
"He still has the hots for you. It's obvious."
Reese put her hands on Regina's shoulders, mimicking her.
"I don't care."
Regina acted like she didn't even hear. "That is why he tries so hard to prove he does not, but everybody knows it." Regina leaned in and whispered in her ear,
"I have pictures to prove it.
And you're telling me this because you think I give a crap?" Regina sighed, obviously baffled at how Reese could be so immune to Paul.
"No, I'm telling you this because Paul has money, and he drinks a lot. And when he drinks a lot, he gets very generous at the dance contests. Put on something sexy, bat your eyes a little, and then dance. If you really hate him for the way he's been treating you, make him pay." She smiled mischievously.
Reese thought about it for a minute. Regina's logic didn't make sense to her, but she needed the cash.
"Wait for me."
Reese ran to her bedroom and dug down to the bottom of her duffel bag. She pulled out a dark brown spandex dress. It brought back sad memories. She'd always lived at home, even while enrolled at college. One neighbor woman, Mrs. Michaels, had taken an interest in Reese's welfare after her mother died, and even more so after her father's funeral. She'd helped Reese through all the details that needed attending to. The day Reese locked the door of her parents' house for the final time, she had to sell it to finalize the estate, she'd slipped over to Mrs. Michaels to say goodbye. The older woman surprised Reese with a present. The kind woman said she couldn't let Reese go off to an exotic island without a little black dress, but she thought Reese always looked better in brown. Reese didn't have the heart to tell her she could never bring herself to wear something so tight, but she packed it anyway, feeling touched and indebted to the woman for all her help. Reese put the dress on and found the bronze sandals she wore her first day on the island. She hadn't worn them since that day, and it made her surprisingly happy to have an excuse to put on her favorite shoes again. She looked in the mirror. She'd lost some weight since arriving on the island, and the dress no longer felt so grossly tight, but it was still a little too much for her. She wished she had something else to wear instead, but she heard a whistle from the door. Tracy and Regina looked her over with obvious respect.
"That should do it," Regina said. "Can you dance?"
"I've been told I can," Reese smiled. Her mother had always said she started dancing before she could even walk.
"We are going to kill something tonight."
"You mean we're going to make a killing," Tracy corrected Regina.
"That is what I just said."
A restaurant, hotel, and bar, the Emerald Starfish had it all. It derived its name from the elaborate mosaic of a starfish on the floor of the bar. The pieces of the mosaic were really just broken pieces of bottles, but there were a lot of green pieces, a sure sign the artist drank a lot of beer. It was a nice place, but off the main street, so they occasionally held dance contests and other gimmicky events to draw customers. Reese had never been there. What an interesting place, she said, looking around, following her friends. Everything sat under the open sky except the scattered hotel cabanas, the kitchen, and the actual bar. It felt almost like a maze in the jungle or a tropical botanical garden. There were amazing pieces of mosaic art scattered around the grounds, set against the foliage. She wondered why the shop gang didn't hang out there more often and enjoy its beauty. She loved it. Reese didn't know where they were going, so she followed Tracy and Regina through the jungle maze to the bar. They walked by the bathroom along the way, and the door happened to be open. It was the nicest public bathroom she'd seen on the island, and her mouth hung open in awe as she walked by. The walls were decorated generously with more beautiful mosaic art, and a real toilet sat inside, instead of the outhouse-type hole in the wooden bench at Tanked. But one thing really caught Reese's eye. Finally, she'd found a public restroom where she could wash her hands. The thought sounded so heavenly, she almost prostrated herself on the spot to pay homage. When she finally looked forward again, after coveting the bathroom, the most famous area of the Emerald Starfish, the magical bar, loomed ahead. The starfish, a huge, amazing, circular work of art, lay on the ground in front of the bar. There were a few tables around the fringes, some set back in the bushes, as most of the walls were nothing more than jungle vegetation. The actual bar sat around a large tree with a roof, while the leaves of the tall trees overhead made up the only ceiling over the rest of the place. It felt like being in an elaborate treehouse, and Reese fell in love. They proceeded straight to the bar to sign up for the contest, and Reese almost changed her mind when they said the contestants were required to drink a shot of tequila and two bottles of beer before they could dance. "It's free. It'll help you dance a little better." Tracy didn't waste time downing her shot. "It helps if you drink it fast." She guzzled the whole bottle in one attempt. Regina followed her lead, so Reese gave in and did what they did. It was all she could do to swallow the burning tequila. Christian stood nearby and pushed a lime into her mouth to help. She thanked him when she finished, cringing. The milder beer actually tasted good after that, at least for the first few gulps. She downed it fast, like Tracy said, but had to stop to take a breath. The next attempt didn't taste as good, and she had to drink the rest one gulp at a time. She self-consciously waited for the contest to get started, watching more and more male spectators show up, plus a few girls. She tugged at her dress, pulling it down, pulling the sleeves up, folding and unfolding her arms, leaning, then not leaning against the bar. Typical island style, they took their time, giving all the men time to ogle the dancers. Her. She regretted wearing the dress. Several of the girls wore colorful sarongs, and a few wore colorful skirts. She was the only one in a solid dark color, tight-fitting dress, and she felt very out of place. Mrs. Michaels had been wrong. A little black, or dark brown in this case, dress might be a must everywhere else, but not on this island. She stood with Regina and Tracy at the bar, drinking her beer. She looked around, concentrating on the beauty of her surroundings instead of her crumbling nerves. She really liked this bar. Her eyes reached the northeast corner, and her stomach did a somersault when she noticed Paul at one of the tables, set back in the foliage, making out with a girl she'd never seen before. Before she could turn away, wishing she hadn't noticed him, he got up and left with the unknown girl in tow. Reese blew out a breath of relief. Her nerves frazzled already, she didn't need him there. She imagined trying to dance while he gave her his usual murderous glare. She shuddered. When one of the bartenders, doubling as a contest official, gathered the contestants to explain the rules, she realized her head seemed a little fuzzy. She took note of the way the alcohol affected her ability to think straight. Her chest felt warm and her muscles relaxed, but her courage still waned. She'd heard alcohol bolstered your courage, but she'd need more courage than she had at the moment. She ordered another beer. A man pinned a piece of fabric with a number on each of the contestants. "The DJ plays the songs and you dance. It's that simple. If he decides to change the song during the contest to see how you adapt, it's his choice. But as long as the music is playing, you should still be dancing. When it stops, it's over. Anything goes, girls. and Guy, work the crowd, he said, looking disgruntled in Christian's direction.
Hey, girly guys like to dance and win a little money, Christian said, and everyone laughed. I made the regional ballroom dance finals every year of secondary school.
He leaned over and whispered to Reese.
They don't like it when I dance, but there's money in my cup every time I compete, so they won't tell me I can't.
The bartender continued. Once the competition starts, stay on the starfish or you'll be disqualified. Have fun and win us all some cash.
He told them the contest would start in about 15 more minutes and encouraged them to warm up, or warm the spectators up if they wanted. Reese followed Regina, Tracy, and Christian onto the dance floor and waited. There were six other girls as well, but Reese didn't know any of them. A few of the girls were already dancing, if you could call it that. Tracy was one of them. They moved around the edge of the dance floor, jiggling their breasts and making lewd gestures, already soliciting votes from the men standing around the circle. That isn't dancing or sexy. That's just gross. Of course, I may be wrong. I don't know the first thing about being sexy, she mumbled, not meaning for anyone to hear her.
Oh, please. You are sexy,
Christian answered. She broke into laughter, a sign the alcohol might be doing its job. And are you a good judge of a woman's sexiness? He acted coy and grinned, knowing what she meant.
Hey, which one of us is driving Paul crazy? You must be sexy to have a man that fine all sweet on you.
She stopped laughing. I'm not doing anything to Paul, and he is not sweet in any way, shape, or form. They both laughed, and she was grateful for the distraction. But once he turned his attention to one of the other girls she didn't know, her jitters returned. She began to feel queasy. The nervousness and the alcohol were not a good mix for her. She rushed off the dance floor toward the bathroom that made such an impression on her, hoping she would make it before she threw up. She reached the bathroom just as Paul opened the door and backed out of it. The girl he'd been making out with earlier hung on to him, coaxing him to come back inside by trying to unzip his pants.
Maybe in a few days, he told her.
I know you said that, but we had so much fun, she said, giggling.
Behave. I don't want to miss the contest.
He gently pulled himself away from her and held her hand so she couldn't try to undress him again. How about tomorrow, then?
That's too soon. I'll see you around, maybe in a few days.
He turned and bumped into Reese. Reese stood frozen. She was astonished that she couldn't seem to get away from him. He stood, just as shocked to see her, and they stared at each other for longer than she could handle. She suddenly just wanted to get home, but the bathroom door remained open, blocking the path. He stood in front of the door, making her exit impossible. He would have to move for her to get by, but he didn't, and she refused to ask him to move. In her flustered, intoxicated mind, she forgot about being sick and about leaving and raced back to the dance floor to get away from him. The second and final warm-up song started, and all the other contestants were dancing now. She folded her arms and stood on the edge of the dance floor, bothered that Paul seemed to mess with her life every time she turned around. It angered her. She still hadn't decided whether she planned to dance or not. While she fumed, an arm slipped around her waist from behind. She instinctively jumped to get away, but whoever had hold of her didn't let go. She turned to face him, red in the face and ready to let loose her fury, but she was immediately disarmed to find Paul standing next to her.
Don't break yourself, he said in her ear.
Break myself?
You're so stiff. What with that stick so far up your ass and all? I'm worried that if you actually move, you're going to shatter into a million pieces.
His smug grin made her so angry she couldn't think of a comeback. She stood, shooting daggers at him with her eyes, the only thing she could manage to do. She knew she could dance and suddenly wanted to prove it. She'd never been drunk before, but she was just drunk enough to realize again she'd need a little more to do what she wanted to do to prove him wrong. She sneered and grabbed his glass, tossing his drink back in one large gulp.
Oh, shoot,
she yelped. She doubled over and waited for her mouth and throat to stop burning. Her eyes felt like they were going to pop out of her head. What the heck was that?
His mouth dropped open, dumbfounded by what she'd just done. Bourbon, double neat, he finally answered with an amused grin, watching her writhe. I'm sorry, but I don't believe even that's going to help. He walked back to the bar to order another. Reese was warm, very warm, and by the time the final practice song ended, she felt quite relaxed. The bartender announced it was time to dance and counted backward from 10. She moved to the center of the circle and gave Paul an arrogant, I'll show you, glare. Her eyes growing glossy as all the drinks she downed relaxed her a little more with every second. The music started and she swayed to the rhythm. It took her a few seconds to get the feel of it, but she started rolling her hands to the sultry beat, like the rolling waves of the ocean, or like a hula. Her waist rolled slightly, but she was just getting into the song when it changed. The DJ decided the song wasn't getting the girls excited enough. The next one was livelier and started out with a rhythmic clapping. It reminded Reese of Drill Team. She started clapping, slapping her thighs, and marching around the floor, military style. Even though she executed the moves with precision, people were amused with her interpretation of the music and laughed. She didn't notice anyone else, but she caught Paul's eye. His lips twitched as he watched, and it made her realize how stiff she must look, dancing around like a tin soldier. It incensed her that she was only proving him right. The music changed. She knew the song and smiled. Six Underground by the Sneaker Pimps. Reese had been on a high school dance team. One day they were bored and choreographed the song, karaoke style, as a gag. She loved the song and started right into the performance. However, being intoxicated, she forgot to lip-sync the lyrics the first part of the song. She promenaded around the dance floor holding an air microphone, singing and dancing as though she were performing on a stage. She executed the hip-hop moves, popping her body slow and then fast, and then slowly again to the way the bouncy music dictated, and then, out of nowhere, she stopped singing, spun to the ground and rolled around seductively without a break in the routine. She arched her back and then rolled onto all fours, crawling gracefully toward Paul like a cat on the prowl, using her shoulders, bouncing them as well as various parts of her body to the beat. Her spandex dress pulled taut and relaxed again, accentuating her attractive figure. It was hot, seductively hot. No one had seen such a thing at past dance contests. The spectators and the other dance contestants were so spellbound, they watched with their mouths hanging open. The DJ was so engrossed in her performance, he wasn't paying attention. The song grew closer to the end, but after getting back up once, she dropped again and gyrated exquisitely on the floor. Someone in the audience started yelling at the DJ to change the song. Others joined in the chant to get his attention. If the song ended, the contest was over, and they wanted more, curious to see what the new girl would do next. The DJ finally regained his senses and pushed a button at the last second, not caring what song was next, as long as the contest continued. The song had a bouncy quality, and Reese grabbed Christian and started doing the bunny hop. The other contestants joined in and everyone laughed, but the DJ was frustrated at his mistake. It wasn't exactly what he wanted to see, and it wasn't soliciting any money votes. He changed the song again. He ran through a string of songs, not playing them very long, but testing Reese, wanting to see how she would interpret each one. She did the Charleston, the swim, more hip-hop, and some modern jazz moves to songs that most people wouldn't consider the right music for the moves, but she made it work. She grabbed Christian again and broke into the cha-cha. He happily went along with her, complimenting her on her style. The music changed again. The primal drum beat pounded, and Reese immediately responded to the rhythm. The song was There There by Radiohead. Reese's style was unique, and she didn't follow Christian's lead in the traditional sense, but his skill as a dancer helped him keep up and improvise, so they both looked good. He stayed at her side with the new song, trying to look good as she ran through the isolation drills she'd learned in belly dancing classes at college. Near the beginning of the song, a long droning sound, like a guitar being played too close to the amplifier, whined through the quality sound system at the Starfish. Reese lowered herself very slowly into a backbend and hung there, letting her hair drape on the floor to the pounding rhythm before leisurely raising back to a standing position, one vertebra at a time. When she'd righted herself again, she glared at Paul, who watched with amused awe. "Stiff?" she mouthed to him. The music and the alcohol carried her away and she was lost, Paul forgotten as well as everyone else. She let herself go for the first time in her life. She broke into a Latin ballroom-style dance, and Christian clapped his hands excitedly. He ran to a girl on the sideline, grabbing the fringy wrap she had tied around her waist over her shorts.
"Can we borrow this? Thank you."
He ran back without waiting for the girl's answer and barely managed to slow Reese down long enough to tie the wrap around her hips. He offered his hand just as the song's intensity increased to the next level. Reese took his hand and, with Christian to use as resistance, she swung her body more arduously than before. The fringe flew, accentuating the way her hips shimmied wildly. Christian did his best to keep up. It took every bit of his experience, instinct, and senses to know when to support her, spin her, dip her, but he did it all with the utmost respect.
"Shakira has nothing on you,"
he said. Reese didn't pay any attention. The song reached its final climax and she danced feverishly, her face beaming as though she loved what she was doing and had fallen prey, lost to a different world. As the song ended, the tempo slowed and she rolled her waist slowly against Christian, who plunged her into a dip and held her there through the final beats of the song. That was it. The DJ knew that even Reese couldn't top that performance, and he let the music end. The people in the audience applauded and started dropping money into Reese's cup as the other bartender made the rounds with the voting tray. Christian finally let go and congratulated her with a big hug, but then he turned to Tracy and Regina.
"Did you see that? Do you realize how much money we're going to get tonight?"
Reese turned and took a step toward them but stumbled. It made her giggle, and she couldn't stop giggling because, no matter how hard she tried, she couldn't seem to regain her balance and straighten herself out. She thought Christian had slipped his arms around her again to steady her. "Whoa, Christian, you may have to dance me all the way home. Apparently, I can dance, but I can't walk worth beans," she giggled. She looked up and realized Paul held her up and not Christian. "Stick up my ass. My ass. You asshole," she slurred and giggled again at what she thought was her outrageous but creative vulgar insult. She would have fallen if it weren't for Paul's arm around her, and she grabbed him back for support. "I might be a lot of things, but I am not stiff."
"Yep, I was wrong," Paul patronized her. "You're anything but stiff. We just need to get you drunk more often."
Paul took her home. Chapter 7. Reese's alarm went off, and she moaned. Not usually one to sleep in. Today, she really wished she had a little more time. She rolled over and moaned again. She was suddenly wide awake. She jumped up and barely made it to the toilet before she threw up. She rinsed her mouth and turned on the shower, something she didn't usually do until after work. She laughed to herself. This was supposed to be a vacation. She felt extra grimy and needed to rinse off. She stepped in and her loud, routine gasp groan escaped, the one that reflexively slipped out every time she voluntarily immersed herself in the cold water pouring out of the open pipe above her head. The islanders didn't know what a showerhead or a water heater was. Other people might not mind a cool shower in a hot, humid climate, but she never liked cold water. She walked back into the bedroom with nothing on but a towel on her head. She leaned down to her duffel bag to pull out something to wear and noticed the wad of cash sitting on the table. It took a second to remember where it came from. There were too many things she didn't remember about the night before. She'd won the contest, and her personal takeaway was $73, a dance contest record. A $50 bill sat tucked in the wad, which could only mean that one spectator had donated $50 to one contestant. She closed her eyes and sighed. She hoped it wasn't Paul. But then, thinking about a total stranger paying that much sounded even worse. She hoped it was Paul after all. She put on her swimming suit and tried to decide what shirt to wear over it. She realized she was going to be late today. She glanced at her clock to see just how late she'd be. 9:40? She racked her brain, trying to figure out how it could possibly be 9:40. Had she hit the snooze button like a million times? Crap, he'll never let me live this down. She raced out of her apartment and headed toward the shop, stopping once to throw up on the side of the road. Ugh, never again.
You're late, Paul growled.
Dock it from my wages, she growled back. Paul turned away so she wouldn't see his grin.
You missed tanks and the bathroom hasn't been cleaned all day.
He pushed. It was hard to say it with the usual crabbiness through the wide smile on his face. Sorry about tank duty. Unbelievable, he thought. She actually felt bad about missing an opportunity for him to abuse her again. But even so, that darn bathroom is still cleaner since I've claimed the job. All to my freaking self. Her voice crescendoed with each word.
Darn freaking, he ridiculed her.
She stuck her tongue out at him and walked toward the bathroom. He watched her, smile still in place, until she rounded the corner from the tunnel and headed toward the bathroom. Tracy and Regina walked into the office from the main door.
Claire, we have to go to the mainland tomorrow. Can you make sure to let Paul know?
Tracy said.
Paul walked in from the tunnel as they said it. Why do you need to go to the mainland?
We need a few things we can't get here, Tracy said.
Reese perked up. She'd been thinking the same thing, and she finally had a little extra money. Paul responded before she could ask to tag along.
You know, I'd rather you didn't go alone. I can only imagine the trouble you two could get into, he chuckled. Seriously, though, I'd be worried about you the whole time. Let me see if I can get a group together, all right?
You don't have to, Tracy started to say. But Regina nudged her with her elbow.
Thank you, Paul, Regina said sweetly. Will you be coming with us this time?
I actually do need a few things, but I can't go tomorrow. Can you wait till the next day?
It surprised Reese to see him so genuinely friendly and happy.
Sure, we are in no hurry,
Regina said. She seemed a little too eager to wait.
Okay, the day after tomorrow. Safety in numbers and all that.
He smiled at them and winked before he walked out of the office. Regina followed him to the door and watched him walk away until he went around the corner and she couldn't see him anymore. Safety? Reese suddenly felt alarmed. Everyone left in the room turned to look at her.
The crime rate on the mainland is frightening, to say the least. They had another bus hijacking just a couple of days ago. That makes 4 in just the last 7 months, Claire said.
Reese had had no idea. She would never have come if she had. Claire must have noticed her concern.
Don't worry, Doc. Here on the island, we're completely isolated from all that shite. Theft is about the only crime you'll see here, Tracy added.
Claire and Regina agreed.
You won't get mugged, but if you leave something valuable lying around, it'll likely not be there later. Paul doesn't like to let anyone from the shop go to the mainland alone. If he can't put a group together, he always makes arrangements for their safety. There's nothing to worry about, Claire said.
Remind me to never need anything from the mainland. I'm not sure I trust Paul to arrange anything for me but my untimely demise. They all laughed, even though Reese didn't really think it was funny. Reese, Claire, and Paul were all in the office at the same time when Claire hollered, "Well, blow me down!" Reese and Paul looked expectantly at her.
We just booked a group. 6 women from the States. 2 weeks from Friday.
Really? That's good.
Paul actually sounded excited. Reese thought his hatred toward her might be softening. Not much, but maybe a little, because he'd started to slip occasionally and let her see some of his other personality traits, besides ornery and pissed off.
Yeah, they said they saw the blog posts. They can't wait to come and meet the famous Paul.
What?
Paul didn't sound quite as happy as he had before. Reese got up and slinked out of the office. Later that day, when Paul walked into the office to grab a bottle of water from the fridge, Claire made another announcement.
We've booked another group.
I heard earlier. That's good news.
No,
Claire said. We've just booked another one. There was a thoughtful frown on his face, and he sat down at his computer, something he hadn't bothered to do in too long. Reese sat on the deck writing in her wine list when Paul slipped down next to her. She hurriedly closed the notebook that held her most personal thoughts.
Want to tell me what you've been up to?
No, not especially. Her heart beat erratically. He pulled his legs up and leaned forward, wrapping his arms around his knees.
Where'd you get the pictures?
Nowhere. He shifted his head and glanced at her out of the corner of his eye. After what felt like a lifetime, he exhaled loudly.
Were you hoping to ruin my business with your new approach? Were you trying to get back at me?
What? Is that what you think? Reese sounded shocked and wounded. I was trying to help. I would never do that. He exasperated her.
I know. Actually, I think.
Every day I read through the comments on our posts. Almost everyone that posts says something about how wonderful you are. She rolled her eyes. The girls do, anyway. Claire mentioned that we need to book more customers, not just students. I thought we should market our strengths. I don't understand why, but you seem to make a favorable impression on people, especially the female clientele. They all talk about how they loved being here with you. They can't wait to come back again to see you, dive with you, do whatever else with you. She had a disgusted look on her face. He had a serious look on his face and shook his head.
I don't like it. You should have cleared it with me first. But I'm finding it hard to be too angry when we've got two trips booked in one day.
I'm sorry. I know how much you like that. You know, being angry with me. He smirked again.
Huh. Yeah, my favorite pastime.
They sat silently for a while. If I had cleared it first, would you have agreed with the idea?
No, he said. But since it turns out you were right, I would have been wrong.
He sat quietly for a minute.
Maybe you could post a few more pictures of the other people at the shop and a few less of me. I don't want to be the only reason anyone might want to dive here. I'd rather pack it up and go home.
He winced at the thought. But 4 out of 5 girls agree you are our hottest dive master, just trying to capitalize on our most marketable asset. She batted her eyes, and he actually chuckled.
Claire is about as happy as I've ever seen her. I always thought it was all about the diving. But you may be onto something. I like how you depict the things I love the most about this place. The daily life, the deck parties, the fun stuff, the people. But the diving is great too, so maybe you could try posting a few diving pictures once in a while, don't you think?
She nodded. Paul being nice to her. She remembered him being nice to her once, but it seemed like a lifetime ago. He stood and then paused. His expression darkened.
It may have turned out this time, but it's my shop. You really should have run it by me first. This just shows you haven't changed. I can't trust you.
He walked off. What is his freaking problem? She threw her hands up in defeat. Chapter 8.
You'll never believe what we just heard. Krista and Doreen squealed as they ran onto the deck. Everyone turned expectantly, waiting for them to explain.
Not a garden is on the island. They've agreed to play a few songs tonight at Island Drivers.
Are you kidding? Mitch said.
Everyone was in a buzz about the news.
Rick grew up in the same town as the bass player. They stopped in to do some diving for a few days. The concert is free and everyone is invited.
There were several small dive shops on the island, but Paradise and Island Divers were the largest operations and often affectionately called diving colleges by the students. Laid out like a campus, Island Divers displayed a more elaborate and spacious layout than Paradise, which was nothing more than a building and a large deck. Island Divers sat in the middle of the island on the inland bay, and while it looked a little more sophisticated than her choice, Reese said a prayer of thanks that she'd chosen Paradise, even with its grumpy owner. The water in the bay was dark, a little smelly, and a yucky green. The campus, lacking the gentle breeze coming off the ocean, felt stuffy and extra humid. The same crude planks, the standard on the island, stretched from one end of the campus to the other. all a very large deck built over swamp ground. A long, narrow building stretched along the north edge of the property, lined with doors. The office and equipment room stood at the west end, farthest away from the water, while the other end appeared to be apartments. Claire had mentioned that Rick made a little extra money renting the apartments to his own students, and that she wished Paradise had room to do that. The extra income would help. A large, round, open building with a roof and a bar with stools encircling it sat in the center of the campus. The kitchen and liquor station were set up inside. On the south edge of campus sat another gazebo, set up like a stage. A set of drums, an assortment of guitars, and a few amplifiers were ready to go. And that is where everyone gathered to find the best place to stand before the famous band started to play. Paul strolled through the entrance with Mitch and Shawnee. He spotted Reese at the bar and their eyes met, but she immediately turned her back on him. Mitch and Shawnee headed toward the stage while Paul made his way to the bar to claim one of the last empty stools, positioned a few feet from where Reese stood and where he would be able to see the stage and watch the concert without having to stand. Tracy and Regina ordered a shot of tequila and a beer. "No, thank you. After the dance contest, I'm never doing that combination again." Reese made the funniest face. She ordered a piña colada. "Mmm, this is good. I can't even taste the alcohol," she said when the bartender handed her the drink. She made Paul grin. "Probably because there isn't enough in there to matter," Tracy laughed for the same reason Paul wanted to. The concert started, and after the first two songs, the lead singer announced they wouldn't play anymore unless the ladies moved to the front and danced. Everyone laughed, but the girls all made their way excitedly to the front. Reese danced in a sea of girls, having a good time. She wasn't intoxicated, so her movements were more reserved, closer to what the others were doing, but better. She danced the way you'd expect someone to dance at a concert, but the control she had over her body, every part of that gorgeous body, she moved more parts all at once than anyone Paul had ever seen. She wore her brown dress and bronze heels again, and Paul only had to look around to know he wasn't the only one admiring the way she moved. He didn't doubt the memory of her winning the dance contest was still on many minds. She danced at the front, so close to the stage she could probably see the sweat on the band members' faces. "Is the drummer making eyes at her?" Paul shifted uncomfortably in his seat and glared at him. The drummer didn't notice how Paul shot bullets with his eyes, but Paul didn't miss the way Reese's cheeks blushed, assuring him that she'd noticed the drummer's admiration too. When the concert ended, the band members came off the stage and started mingling with the crowd, signing autographs and having their pictures taken with their fans. Reese moved back to a vacant spot at the bar, not far from where Paul sat, and ordered another piña colada. While she waited for her order, she leaned over the bar and reached behind to fiddle with the napkins, straightening them. She studied the paraphernalia behind the counter, adjusted a few more items. She finally noticed Paul, and they stared at each other for several seconds. He couldn't read her expression. He tried to keep his neutral until she was the first to look away, turning her head as far from his direction as she could crane her neck, and rested her chin on her hand. He ordered another drink, but didn't stop watching. Someone stepped right next to her, invading her personal body space, and she jerked, turning quickly to scowl at the intruder. "Hi, you're a pretty good dancer." The drummer stood next to her, and her mouth dropped to the floor. He stood so close that they could have been Siamese twins, in Paul's opinion. "I'm Rob." He held out his hand, but she gaped in shock, or awe, and didn't take it. He finally reached for hers and manipulated it to look like they were shaking hands, and he smiled. "And you are?" "Reese," she squeaked. "Nice to meet you, Reese." He smiled at her until she seemed to regain her wits. A goofy, starstruck grin broke across her face. "You're a pretty good drummer." She couldn't stop smiling. "I've always wanted to play the drums." "Oh, really? It's about time you had a lesson then." He never did let go of her hand as he pulled her up to the stage. Reese followed like a starstruck groupie. Paul watched them as Rob sat on the seat at the drums and pulled her onto his lap. He put a drumstick in each of her hands and, with his hands around hers, proceeded to lightly play while getting all cozy with her. Reese laughed and acted all embarrassed every time she messed up, and Rob smiled and laughed with her while he had his hands all over her.
"What a pud," Paul mumbled.
They were having a good time. Too good a time. Paul had never seen her so happy. He looked away with a scowl. After what felt like a lifetime, he glanced back in time to see them leave the stage and walk out the entrance of the shop. He tossed back the rest of his drink and grumbled an order for another. Things were a little different at the shop when they had guests. The Swensons, a family of six, showed up the next day. There was Mr. and Mrs. Swenson, a 15-year-old daughter named Heather, and a 13-year-old son, Matthew, both from the father's previous marriage. A 5-year-old boy, Asher, and a 3-year-old girl named Imogene were new additions from the current and obviously newer model, Mrs. Swenson. All of them were certified except the two youngest. Students took a back seat to whatever the guests needed. Paul coached everyone to treat their guests like royalty and even had Mitch set up their gear for them. The students were always expected to set their own gear up. With Paul to supervise and Mitch as the designated dive master, the boat left that morning while the mother stayed with the young children. Reese could tell how sad it made her to be left behind. "The sacrifices a mother makes," Reese said. The mom smiled. "Yes, I knew this was going to happen the second I got pregnant the first time. I love being a mom, but sometimes..." "Well, you're scheduled for the night dive tonight, right?" Mrs. Swenson shook her head. "I'm not sure. My husband told his kids we would all take turns sitting out a dive to watch the little ones, but you know teenagers." When the boat came back, Reese didn't hesitate to jump in and help put the gear away. Mitch and Paul were the only others who did. The Swensons left to go get lunch and take the kids back to their room until the night dive. Once the Swensons were gone, the people at the shop returned to their normal routines, and Reese grudgingly found herself sitting against the gazebo rail, unnoticed and subjected to the latest coitus club gossip. She had 2 more pages to finish reading, and then she'd head to the office to get away. Shelley announced she had to leave early, and once she was far enough away, Doreen excitedly recounted to the remaining girls the details of her surprise visit from Paul the night before. Apparently, angry sex with Paul, in Doreen's opinion, was absolutely the best thing ever. Normal sex was still a mystery, something Reese didn't allow herself to think about. But surprisingly, she found herself a little too curious about whatever the heck angry sex could be. "Isn't all sex angry when Paul's involved?" Shani asked with a little laugh. Shani wasn't an official member of the club, as far as having first-hand knowledge of Paul's lovemaking skills, but she was fabulously pretty, and as Mitch's girlfriend, she'd known Paul longer than any of the other girls. She fit in well at their meetings, sharing other insights about Paul, things she'd gleaned from their association. The man has 3 emotions: angry, drunk, and horny. All the girls laughed except Regina, who always sat close enough to hear, intentionally. "No, he is so much more than that." Regina was quick to defend him. "How can you say such a thing? I thought you were his friend." "Paul is Mitch's friend," Shani answered. "I didn't like him at first. He's better now since Ginger left." Ginger. Regina let the name roll off her tongue with a jeer, as though it left a nasty taste in her mouth. It was the first Reese had heard of Ginger. Even Tracy hadn't mentioned her. Reese stifled a laugh at the idea that Paul was better now than before. "This is better?" "Mitch told me." Shani glanced around to see if Paul or Mitch were within earshot. She leaned into the girls to share her secret. "When they first met, Paul told Mitch he'd killed someone. They were both wasted at the time, but when Mitch asked him about it later, Paul said Mitch must have been hallucinating, refused to talk about it, ever again." "Preposterous. Mitch did hallucinate such a thing," Regina said. "Paul is no murderer." "I didn't say murder," Shani said, eyeing Regina as if wondering why she was even there, like she'd just realized Regina didn't fit in. "That's just what I heard, and Paul did get into a lot of fights back then, didn't pick fights, as I recall, but he never backed down, and he always won." "Glad he doesn't fight anymore," Krista said. "I'd hate to see that pretty face disfigured." All the girls nodded, murmuring in agreement.
I'm glad he's just a lover now, not a fighter. Though, I'd have angry sex with him any time, Dorian said with a wicked grin. In fact, I'm looking for a volunteer to go irritate him for me right now. I'd be up for another round.
Ha, Britta said. You know how it works. It's been a while since I've had my turn, though. Who'll volunteer?
Where's Rhys when we need her?
Britta asked, and they all broke into a fit of laughter, while Rhys held her breath, wondering how long she'd be stuck hiding behind the rail.
Princess Denaria, I need you in the office now.
Paul's voice cracked over the speaker.
What?
Rhys pursed her lip. Her given name wasn't bad enough. Why'd he call me that? The Coitus Club girls had finally left for lunch, but Rhys still didn't move. She smirked to herself, thinking how they'd run off too soon after their remark about her irritating Paul. She knew it wouldn't sit well with him to be ignored, but decided to live up to her reputation.
Denaria, get your ass in here!
It only made her more determined to defy him. She got up from the floor of the deck and moved to sit on top of the table inside the gazebo, where he'd be sure to find her. She waited for him to come out of the office. He did, and when he spotted her, he marched at her like he was on a mission to kill someone with his bare hands. She remembered Shani's comments and regretted her decision to anger him. Her heart pounded, but she tried to keep a brave face.
I called you to the office, he roared.
I didn't hear you call me.
She folded her arms and held her ground, but she wasn't too far from breaking out into a case of the shivers. There was something more to his mood than his usual grumpy self. He really is going to kill me.
I called twice.
His tone calmed a little, looking her over. I only heard you call Denaria. I'm Rhys. She worked to keep it steady. And princess? His jaw set and his cheek twitched as he looked her over again.
Rhys, would you please come to the office?
Yes, I would be happy to, she said sweetly. She finally relaxed when she caught a glimpse of him trying not to smile.
He turned and headed back with her on his heels, wondering what he wanted that was so important and had him all riled up. He walked into the office and sat down at his computer, leaving her to wait for him to tell her.
The plants need water, he muttered.
Seriously? All this about the plants?
She'd just watered them yesterday, but it wasn't worth the fight. She grabbed the two plants in the office and carried them out to the shower to soak them. She returned them to their place and started to walk out.
The t-shirts need to be organized. The Swensons said they want to buy a few.
She looked at the box of already organized shirts. She wasn't about to pretend to organize them again. She looked around the now very organized office. She'd been working hard. She enjoyed organizing, and she was good at it. She sighed and plopped into Claire's chair, since Claire and Dobbs were out to lunch.
Darn it, Paul, why don't you just tell me what the crap is really bothering you? Rhys asked.
He turned and flashed his murderous glare. She didn't shrink this time. She knew he had something on his mind, and she wanted him to just get out with it.
What makes you think there's something bothering me?
Because you're even freaking grumpier than your usual meanie-head self?
Shoot, darn, gosh, crap, freaking, and now meanie-head? Fuck, did you get your potty mouth in the back alleys of Mayberry?
No, she yelled. She didn't mean to. She took a breath and tried not to smile. Sesame Street.
He actually chuckled. Kind of. He closed his eyes and she watched as he played with his mouth, alternating between biting his lips and pursing them. He seemed calmer when he opened them again.
So, what did you do last night?
Went to the concert.
After?
I got a free drum lesson from a famous world-class drummer.
I saw. Then what did you do?
Why do you care?
Paul shrugged casually.
Just find it curious that Miss Stick-Up-Her-Ass is too good for the locals, but a famous world-class drummer comes to town.
She hung her head, not because of what Paul said, but because of what really happened the night before.
I don't want to talk about it.
Did he hurt you?
Paul suddenly sounded concerned.
No, she scowled. Not physically, anyway, she thought.
Paul exhaled and looked out the window. Rhys watched as he ran his lips through his trademark motions, a slow lick of his lips, bite the lower lip, pucker, cheek twitch, pucker again. She only now realized it was a nervous habit.
It shocked her a little to think he ever got nervous. Is that it, then? You just wanted to know last night's agenda? He was so confusing. He slowly tilted his head toward her. His eyes rolled to meet hers. He still had a scowl on his face. Paul, this is getting really old. I'll be going home soon, and you still haven't scheduled me to get my open water dives. Maybe you could prorate my tuition and let me go to Island Divers to finish while I still have time. We could be out of each other's hair. No, he said, clipped and angry again. I don't prorate anything, and I don't give fucking refunds just because a fucking student gets all wishy-washy and can't just be honest about what really the fuck is going on. They didn't see Claire walk in. Would you really let me go home without my certification, even though I paid you every penny I have in the world to get it? The last thing she wanted to do was cry in front of him, but tears welled in her eyes. No, Reese, he won't do that, Claire yelled. He's going to get you on the bloody boat before it's too late. If he doesn't, I will take you out and certify you myself. We'll do it from the shore if we have to. Paul whipped around and glared at Claire, but she just glared right back and didn't flinch. Reese slipped out through the tunnel and leaned against the wall in the compressor room. She slid down to the floor and cried. She was done. She'd used up all her reserve courage, and now she just wanted to run. She would run if her muscles weren't trembling so badly. She could still hear the shouting match between Paul and Claire, though she wished she couldn't. She put her hands over her ears as the tears continued to stream down her face. "Why do you have it in for her so bad?" Claire screamed. "She hasn't done anything wrong. She's a good person, and you know it." "Remind me why I keep your sorry ass around," Paul boomed. "Because I'm the only one who's smart enough to hate you as much as you hate yourself," Claire retaliated. Finally, she said it. Paul smirked. He closed his eyes and did the mouth twitchy thing before walking out and headed to the only bar open that early in the day. It took Claire a minute to find Reese. She sat down next to her and leaned her head against Reese, and they sat together in silence for a few minutes. "I don't know what's bloody wrong with that man, but I'm going to find a way to fix this, okay? I'll talk to Dobbs. We'll find a way around Paul." "No, Claire, please don't. It doesn't matter anymore. I'll be gone before you know it."